the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
The Guardians' 10-game losing streak, that came to an end last night. It's still not very good. To talk about the direction forward with the Guardians, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome on longtime MLB exec, MLB Network analyst Steve Phillips. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be with you.
That's good to be with you here. We're in a precarious situation with the Guardians and how they've gone from the ALCS to now being, I want to say we're still seven games below 500. Is it too early to bail on the season if you're the Guardians?
I think it is, only because the American League is I think, up for grabs still, a little, particularly the wild card. There's just no, I mean, Detroit's played great, but I still have some doubts about them. I start thinking about the other teams around. There's so many teams right around 500 that a good hot streak. I mean, look, if they win out going into the All-Star break, the Guardians, they're right back in the mix for all of this. So I think it's a little too early to bail on it. I'd like to see what they do going into the break and coming out of it. But they've got to find ways to score runs, and they just haven't been able to do that.
So where does your optimism lie? What's the strength of your optimism there?
Well, the bullpen. I love the bullpen, and obviously it's they don't have to score a lot. They just have to score enough. And that's really been the MO there. I mean, they can't buy power in the free agent market, power arms or power bats. So they've got to try to find different ways to get it done. Part of my optimism is they did it last year. And, they did get contributions from a lot of different players last year that allowed them to score enough to be able to compete. But I get that it's not happened so far. But quite honestly, it's not happening so far for a lot of teams in the American League.
Steve, one of the things we talked about, you talked about the inability to buy power, which is absolutely true. But just in general, this organization, and it goes even beyond the current run of success or lack thereof, they just haven't been able to find and develop even hitting. Like they've spent a lot on great contact hitters. And then a fair amount of those guys never became what Stephen Kwan became, who was a great college hitter, contact hitter. I'm just curious, like when you're dealing with an organizational issue like that, how easy is it to fix something like the hitting side of your developmental track?
Yeah, quite honestly, I think it's in some ways, and you're right. I mean, that's been the issue for them is they're a great pitching development organization. So they don't get it done with offense. And I think that's something that they need to really look at. I would take a hitter over a pitcher in the draft. If everything's equal, I'm take the hitter because it's much more difficult, I think, to find hitters in the marketplace if you don't get them and develop them yourself. And so, and they've spent some time and money on drafting pitching. And sure, it can pan out, but I think you can find pitching in different places. I mean, even if you just start thinking about, pitchers on their staff and where they came from and how they got them and in trades and how they bring guys in. And, you can go get the Ben Livelys and Ortizes and guys like that for your rotation, but you can't get the power bat. You can't get the guy that can hit and play defense for you. And so I think that philosophically, they spent so much time on being so good on pitching that I think they need to find ways to go get bats because you can't always trade a pitcher for a hitter. But oftentimes, if you've got an everyday player, somebody will give you a pitcher for them, and they'll find a way to go get more pitching themselves. And so I think they really need to focus on not only developing, but they've got to draft more of them. I remember a couple of years ago, the Angels said, we can't ever get pitching. So they drafted 20 pitchers. Mm-hmm. They drafted all pitchers in the draft. And I'm thinking, no, if you want pitching, go sign 20 hitters, and then you've got access to everybody's pitching if you can do that. And so I kind of look at it a little bit differently, and I think that the focus has to be on the offense because you can find arms.
What's interesting about that Angels draft is that they didn't hit on any of them either. That was the impressive part. They just whiffed on all 20 of them. But like I do think that they have, Steve, they have organizationally shifted. Yes, they're known for their pitching, but they have changed. I mean, 9 out of the top 10 prospects in the organization right now is all hitters. It's all offense. It's just they're having a hard time getting those guys from AAA to the big leagues and watching it actually work out. And what we've seen now, and there's obviously some bad trades in there, but it feels like we have a bunch of Ernie Clements out there where these are these guys that they come up, they don't do particularly much, then they trade them off to a different team, and before you know it, then they're just mashing in other places.
Yeah, well, I think that part of that is patience. And, you know, one of the things about, you know, in because we've been so spoiled with young guys getting into the big leagues and performing well, that when anybody has a little bit of a bobble, we think, oh, he's not going to be able to hit. And then they slowly start to figure it out. Ernie Clement's a great example of that right now. Like, he's been such an important player for the Blue Jays and their dramatic run, winning 9 in a row and back atop the American League East. And you know, guys like Addison Barger and that, who, you know, were good minor league hitters that got up and they struggled. And, you know, you can give up on those guys. And the next thing you know, they figure it out a little bit. I think the other thing is that if you can find veteran players, and they do a good job, the Carlos Santanas and guys like that they bring in. But a veteran good hitter doesn't have to have power, but just assign one of those guys who's approached. Like, I thought a J.D. Martinez would have been a great pickup. Now, he didn't get offered enough money from anybody. He decided to sort of not come back and play this year. But he's a guy that has power. It wasn't going to cost money. He's older, but he is such an approach-based hitter that I thought a guy like that would have been a great fit for the Guardians, because – sometimes it's the way you think. It's not swinging the bat that's the issue. It's thinking that becomes the problem for hitters. Everybody's swing is pretty much a good swing by the time they get to the big league. It comes down to, what are you thinking? What are you looking for? What's your plan? And guys like J.D. Martinez, who really figured out a plan, I think could help so many young hitters. And those are the kind of guys I would look for them to try to add to this roster moving forward in the future.
Steve, let's say 3 weeks from now, they're another 3 or 4 games below 500, and they decide to sell. What the two big names, the one obviously is Class A, one we've talked about because of where his contract is. He's got 2 years of control left after this, so 3 years of postseason control is Stephen Kwan. What scenarios do you think would make – what teams do you think would be lining up to trade for either one of those guys?
Yeah, so, you know, Kwan is a blender offensively. He's not an aircraft carrier. And so I think you could make any deal you could make today, you can make a year from now for him. And so I don't know that I make a move right now for him. I don't. I think that, you know, he's you know, let him play it out a little bit, see if you can extend him. I mean, he's not going to break the bank. He's the kind of guy that they can afford, actually, with the type of player that he is. And so I don't know that I move him, because I don't know that you get a lot. You know, Cedric Mullins is out there in the market, probably from Baltimore. And, you know, I don't know that I move Kwan right now. For Class A, I'd keep an open mind. I want him to pitch better going into it, to where, you know, the market out there steps up a little bit. But I would trade him. I would. I think that I mean, I love Kate Smith. I think Gattis, they've got guys who can fill that ninth inning. And if they can get a big score for it, then I would absolutely consider trading Class A. And, you know, for the amount of innings that he eats as a closer, if you can get premium return for him when teams are hungry for the postseason, especially this time of year, I'd be all over. It's got postseason pedigree, although not perfect. It certainly is the pedigree to get there. I would absolutely move him if teams come calling.
What kind of return would Shane Bieber get?
Yeah, nothing really. I mean, I think that, you know, with the injury history and working back, you know, we saw the Matthew Boyd deal last year, right? That, you know, you didn't, you know, picking him up down the stretch and you know, the Alex Cobb deals and picking him up down, or I guess Boyd was there for the injury recovering, but the Alex Cobb sort of deals, that's not going to bring anything in return, because, you know, not having pitched, not having shown what you can do, I think teams would just be like, they're going to downplay it. And there will be better, healthier options that they can consider at the deadline.
Steve Phillips on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So When it comes to where the Guardians are, if you're in a stretch like this, would you rather just finish the skid and then use the All-Star break as a reset, or do you think you can even reset before the All-Star break?
Oh, yeah, I think you have to try to reset now. I think that is dangerous thinking, to think, okay, let's just get to the break and we'll fix it afterwards. I think you've got to have the daily grind to fix it today. Because if you wait till then, I mean, these games matter. You know, this next week matters. Those are 6 or 7 games that you're not going to get back. And so the idea of you know, just saying, well, you know, we'll fix it over the break, I think you've got to try to fix it every, you know, Saturday going into Sunday before the All-Star break. You got to try to fix it. And I'm sure they are. They're trying to do what they can to get things going. You know, and I will tell you, the Blue Jays are a good example. I mean, they didn't hit a lick until they did. And they got it going. And it's, you know, guys sort of getting out of their own heads. You know, we see everybody in the dugout with that hangdog look, looking at the video on the iPad, trying to figure out what's going on with the pitch and their swing. And instead of rooting for each other and picking each other up, and somehow the Guardians have to get back into that mode of you know, good starting pitching, score early, play defense, take the extra base, be aggressive because you got a lead, and get a rhythm to the way they play and then shake hands at the end of the game. But, you know, right now they're trailing all the time. They've got high pressure at bat. They you know, they can't be as aggressive on the bases because they fall behind. And, you know, they just they've gotten out of that rhythm that has been their way of playing over the last couple of years. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can't get it turned around.
Has this changed the viewpoint on Stephen Vogt nationally, or do you feel like that's just even an unfair question based off of the lack of talent that exists on this roster?
Yeah, I don't think it's a judgment there. I you know, I mean, good managers, you know, are you know, he's a good manager last year and manager year because his pitchers pitched and they scored enough and everything went right. And, you know, he can still do all the right things. He can be even a better manager this year and the results won't happen. And, you know, underperformance and injuries and the right guy going down at the wrong time. And so, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to doubt that he's a quality manager.
Steve, really great stuff, man. Appreciate you, and can't wait to see how the second half of the season unfolds.
Terrific. Thanks for having me on, guys. Best of luck to you guys and the Guardians.
Thank you so much. Steve Phillips there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, MLB Network. What stood out there?
Well, there's a couple of, I mean, he's got a lot of optimism for this team, and I'm a little surprised at the amount of optimism he had. It's almost a breath of fresh air to make it not seem like we're just drowning, but I just don't know locally that many people see it otherwise.
We'll react to what Steve had to say in a different way of looking at the Guardians at the deadline. I don't know if we agree with it, but it is certainly a different way of looking at it. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. They were kind of listing right around that last wild card spot. And even then, they were at some points a game and a half up on it. The 10-game losing streak, you know, like, listen, 3-game, 5-game, 6-7 games, probably should make, once you get to double digits, I don't care that it ended last night, 10-game losing streaks are the perfect thing. When everything people had been worried about comes to fruition, that is the exclamation point and maybe the defining point of your season.
It just felt like they had no answer, no way of getting out of it. I mean, even last night, you can make an argument that they had the 4-run lead, should be pretty comfortable, and then they blew that lead, and then you watch them had to fight and claw with a Rocchio hit in order to get to take over and actually have the lead again. Like, it just, nothing's come easy with this team.
And here's the thing. We're also, listen, where maybe Steve's at is, Steve hasn't had to endure the 10-game losing streak. I mean, I think I'm even a little more calm than other people at the station because I was watching it in Michigan on a beach. So, like, I was watching it from a different vantage point of that's how most of us have ended our nights during that 10-game stretch. There's a part of
the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
That I just don't know what they can do in the next 3 weeks that is going to change the reality of where they are and what they need going forward. Even if DeLauder came up and was lights out as a hitter, I think you're probably at least 2 hitters away from this being a cogent attempt at a lineup.
Yeah, I mean, the offense just isn't anywhere close to good enough, and I think it's very apparent that this team isn't close to good enough, and that's fine. Now it's just what they do from there. And it's interesting, like, we asked Steve, like, what do you do with Bieber, for instance? He's like, Bieber doesn't have a market. Yeah. Like, he laughed
and,
at it.
And I actually disagree with that.
I do, too. I don't know why he was so dismissive of Shane Bieber's market.
Maybe it's because he's coming off Tommy John, but the reality is, and listen, what Steve might be pointing at is, it also might be that Shane hasn't pitched in a major league game yet. And I think Shane's value gets really interesting the second he's actually on the mound for the Guardians and proves he's healthy.
Do we have an update on him, by the way, in any capacity? Because we had, 3 weeks ago? He was getting set and he was ready to go. And then it's just been like another setback. And then it just kind of has been something that's been floating.
I have not heard anything. I know John Means 2 weeks ago threw off the mound for the first time. So that probably puts him another 6 weeks away from where he needs to be, but still somewhere in the August range for him to pitch for the Guardians.
It's going
to
be odd, especially with the fact that we don't even know what arguably the second best pitcher for the previous, I said since May 5th on, because by wins above replacement, that's entirely accurate. But the second best pitcher we might find out in the upcoming 10 or so days that he's just not playing baseball anymore.
It's also really, really interesting just to what you're saying that if Bieber and Means both come back in August, or if Bieber comes back at the end of this month, which still feels a bit ambitious, but you get both those guys back. And then, by the way, Slade Ciccone's got a spot. Logan Allen, who has, again, been serviceable but not great. But then you've got your young guys. You can end up having a surplus. I think the post-mortem on the Guardians is, man, you spent a lot trying to fortify the rotation, and everything went right on the rotation, and nothing went right in the lineup, and that ended up, you basically overcorrected, when if you were going to overcorrect coming off last year, it probably was to fix the lineup.
Well, and so that's why Steve, when he entered the conversation, he went really hard with the idea, and this is just the outside view speaking here, but he went really hard on the idea that maybe the Guardians have gone too hard in developing the pitching. And like, you need to put some of the resources towards the hitting. But we here locally have been paying a close enough eye to understand the Guardians have been transitioning away from being this awesome pitching factory and have been trying to become this place that they can develop hitters. The problem is they're just not developing them enough.
And if anything, and this is actually
something, they're taking bites at the apple.
And if anything, like, the pitching machine was interrupted, right? And that's why they had to trade for Ciccone. That's why they had to trade for Luis Ortiz. Because you had gotten to a point where guys like Tristan fell apart. There's a couple other guys. Plesac just completely fell off the face of the planet. A lot of the guys you were banking on carrying your rotation for 3 to 5 years fell out. And then because you had maybe turned some of that attention, full cannons to the offense,
right,
then all of a sudden you had to backfill the pitching, which, by the way, does look like, if you look at the younger part of their system, it does look like the pitching is coming along. It is. You've got guys like Messick, guys like that.
I do think they put a lot on the idea that they could just churn out the pitching factory whenever they wanted to. Yes. And I don't know. There's a part of me there. So when they were really going, and obviously there was the transition there from Kluber to Bieber, but when it was in that Bieber, like that time in between when Kluber was still on the roster and it hadn't quite gotten to Bieber yet, but it was Clevinger and it was all these other pitchers. Trevor Bauer was in that mix as well, and Mickey Callaway was the pitching coach, but it was all these guys that were just obsessed with pitching, and I almost thought the pitching factory thing got a little overrated. Not that they weren't great, they were, but I thought it was more because the players at the big league level themselves were just so obsessive, and they were just so another level about the pitching mechanics and how to just squeeze out every juice of it. And I just never thought the pitchers themselves got enough credit in that whole discussion.
And I would really love to have a conversation with Antonetti and Chernoff and wonder why their minor league system isn't like Tampa Bay's. Tampa Bay just consistently churns out great prospects. And they're really not precious with them either. Like, they'll trade a guy who's a top prospect for somebody else's top prospect if it, like, fills a need. It basically gives them a chance. And Guardians have done a little bit of that. But mostly, like, the Guardian system has been good the last 6 or 7 years. It's also been buoyed by guys they've traded for. And I think that's... And they've had to trade for them because they haven't done a good enough job of refilling their own pond. And again, they haven't done an awful job at it. But it's interesting that if you kind of, they have been fits and starts with their player development just in entirety, which I think is really, again, they've done well enough to have the season they had last year and 2 years ago. But if they were 20% better, they would have a consistency of winning that, even though they still probably aren't winning a World Series with the way things go, man, you wouldn't have to go ahead and dip into the waters to save your season like with Lane Thomas, Matthew Boyd, and Alex Cobb last year.
It's just interesting. The whole thing is interesting. And it's funny because I don't even feel like they're that far away, but at the same time, I feel like they're miles away.
Okay, so if DeLauder came up tomorrow, he won't. But if DeLauder came up tomorrow or after the All-Star break.
No, they're more than a DeLauder
and
away.
He was just, so is it DeLauder and Angel Martinez?
I think there was a time maybe 15 games ago where I could convince myself that they weren't, they were always going to be more than a DeLauder away. But I think it would have been more palatable, maybe let's say 15 games ago. And then you could start to see where maybe you could just fill out. You needed guys that were actually here on the roster to be better is the problem. And they just haven't been. They haven't materialized.
And this to me is the only reason I wouldn't trade the guys that they can trade. I don't know if you trade Class A for like the kid from Chicago we've talked about, Owen Cassie, and a couple other prospects. I don't know it would be the smart thing to bring a young kid up like that in the midst of this. Like, it is a systemic. They are pressing so hard at the plate. They're trying so hard to get it right that there's no confidence there. And it's so hard for a young guy to step into a lineup that's already hitting. It's impossible to step in, especially if you're the guy that just got traded from Angel Class A.
If they traded for, that's a problem though. In the instance of like Cassie, for instance, they would just keep him, they would trade for him and then they'd keep him down in the minors. And then we'd have the discussion the way we're having with DeLauder and Kafis this year. And he would just be thrown in the mix next year with that.
See, the only reason I like Cassie is he had AAA experience last year and he's almost got he's got a half a season this year.
Yeah.
Theoretically, their math problem, which is you have to have 1,000 at bats in the minors. Theoretically, that would be like one of like five guys you could trade for that wouldn't fit that.
You'd be closer to it, but I've seen this organization. You've seen it for too long. I just have a feeling that's how they'd operate.
So here's a different way to look at the Guardians of the deadline. And I don't know you're going to love it. Terry Pluto, we played his stuff on Darius Garland earlier in the show. Baskin Phelps also asked him about the Guardians of the deadline, and I didn't agree with what I think JP and I have been saying.
You don't have much to fire sale. This is not like even when they had Mike Clevenger to get rid of, or who had turned on a lot of different extensions, or when they had Lindor. The point that I'm saying is they don't have that much to sell because most of the guys that they have are younger and there wouldn't be that appealing. You know, Class A would be very appealing to both. It should be both to Cleveland and also to other teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, Paul Sewald is making more money than Class A.
So I think it's interesting. Like, if we talk about the big picture stuff, like, yeah, you're probably not going to get a haul for Carlos Santana. You can get a good prospect for him. Because I think, I think we're just negating the Kwan conversation. Like,
yeah,
I think Kwan, Class A, and Santana could take your farm system from, I think it was ranked 10th best in baseball, start of the season. And that could be the very best.
I mean, I would hope so. So I was looking at some of these, and I don't know if you saw the same list. I'm not bringing up Byron Buxton to go ahead and just have a Byron Buxton conversation.
Although he would have been great 10 games ago.
We'll let the record show. Always been a pro Byron Buxton guy. That's what makes that conversation even harder.
Didn't sound like it when you were poo-pooing it.
It just made it even harder.
He's been even better.
We got to rewrite that framing on that, by the way. I was asked for my opinion, and I gave my opinion. That is the job, is it not?
You gave your opinion, but there's giving your opinion at a nail, like a hammer, and then there's giving it like a cannon. Okay, that was bad. It's giving your opinion in the form of a six shooter and giving your opinion in the form of a cannon.
I prefer cannon.
You chose the cannon.
I prefer cannon always. You know this about me.
But you don't like the cannon. You like using the cannon, but
I
you
love
don't want cannons
cannon.
To be used on you.
You use cannons on me all the time.
Oh,
this is a cannon versus cannon versus cannon fight.
This is no. This is a friendly pew 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 versus a shadoosh.
Shadoosh.
I did,
and he never throws cannons, huh?
I wasn't taking a shador shot there. I was trying to mimic a cannon, and I don't have a cannon sounder.
Shadoosh.
That's what you're...
We both throw cannons constantly, so
So anyway, 3.3 war for Byron Buxton, 20 home runs.
So here's some of the offers they had up for Byron Buxton, just to give some like context for what Buxton is getting in return. And I just thought it was interesting, because if like you said, like a couple prospects for Kwan, a couple prospects for Class A, and I'll even throw the Skubal scenarios that were in the mix here, or sorry, the Skeen scenarios that were in the mix as well, to kind of give some proper context. I don't think you're getting nearly as much value in the open market as maybe some people think. So, for instance, Kansas City in this was going to offer Cole Reagans and David Shields. So that's like two actual major league players that's ready to go. It is what it is. But from a prospect perspective, the Phillies, for instance, Andrew Painter and then outfielder Justin Crawford. Painter is number 23 in baseball system. He is one of the – he's a very good pitcher. He's going to be an everyday starter at some point. He's very, very good. But he's still the 23rd best pitcher in baseball or prospect in baseball, and then an outfielder in Justin Crawford. Like,
let me ask you, is that for Class A?
This is for Buxton.
Oh, Buxton.
Yeah, this is for Buxton. Yeah.
And by the way, I think Kwan's value would actually be more than Buxton's because the injury thing is a fair thing.
So, like, but
and financially.
So, okay, that's interesting.
Because Byron's got 3 years after this, 3 or 4 years at $15 million a year.
So that's the advantage for Buxton, the idea that his contract is so friendly.
Oh, but he's got $10 million in incentives each year.
Because Kwan, you're going to have to pay $125 million to.
Well, but not for the next 2 years.
No, you get to
2.5
basically
years,
right? Have that relatively deferred. That is what it is. All right, how about Skeens? In trade scenarios with Skeens, I'll go to the Tigers scenario here. They offered Max Clark, who's the number 8 prospect in baseball, Kevin McGonigal, the number 11 prospect in baseball, Jackson Jobe, Colt Keith, and Sawyer Gibson Long. Like,
Who's the we? Who is this, like a hypothetical thing?
This is what ESPN did today. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right, sorry if I didn't lay in the framework.
No, it's okay.
So yeah, this is ESPN coming up with these scenarios. Even like with the Mets offer is the prospect number 20, prospect number 50, and then a couple players essentially is what it is. I don't know that the haul, if people are thinking you're going to get two major prospects for Class A or two major prospects for Kwan, anything more than that, I think, is a reach. And I don't even know that you're getting that based off of what the Buxton deals are and then based off what the Skeens deals are projected to be right now.
I will say I would be surprised if you traded either guy and didn't get two top 100 prospects. Now, the devil in the details here is what else do you get? But like if you said, for instance, with the Tigers, and this wouldn't happen because you're not going to trade either guy. If you traded either guy for McGonigal and Clark, that would be a holy crap. Fans wouldn't react that way. But I think Clark is in A ball, and I think McGonigal just went to AA. Those are two top 12 prospects in baseball. That's huge.
Yeah, they're number 8 and number 11. Yeah. Like it's a massive haul, but it's still, in the context of things, maybe if you're getting two top 100, maybe you got to look at it more like number 47 and number 74. But I think it's interesting. Like Skeen should get the haul of hauls. He's got a sub ERA of 2. He's got more of a wins above replacement than he has actual wins on the season, which is odd enough. But like he is the premier in baseball.
We've got, in case we missed it, coming up for LeBron. Everything's been earned. This might be a given. In 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.